Hey, you guys, welcome back to Flickers of Fear, and it's another installment of Giallo July. I'm having actually a really good time doing these, and I hope you guys are too. I have gotten a lot of good feedback about this. So apparently there's a lot of other Giallo junkies out there that are very, very happy that I decided to devote a whole month to the subgenre. So if you like it, leave me a comment down below, and maybe I'll do another Giallo-themed month sometime in the future. So let's talk about Lucio Fulci. Now, nobody would ever... I guess, accuse him. He's made like lots of different types of movies, not just splatter ones, but he's probably, at least in the United States, he's most famous for his splatter films like Zombie and The Beyond and stuff like that. So nobody would ever really accuse him of being particularly subtle as a filmmaker. But I have to say, even in his sort of, you know, the wide span of his work, which includes, you know, very famously splinter eye gougings, somebody coughing up their intestines, a little girl with braids getting her head half blown off by a shotgun, spider attacks, things of that nature. Even in light of all that, his 1982 Giallo thriller, The New York Ripper, some of his fans, even the most ardent ones, are just kind of like, hey, I think you went a little bit too far with that one. I don't think it's so much in terms of gore, but just in the sense of how sleazy and kind of misanthropic and nasty and like unpleasant to watch it is, because it's not like some of his other stuff like House by the Cemetery and The Beyond and stuff like that, which had kind of a more surrealist, nightmarish kind of thing. So the gore was kind of like taken a little bit out of a realistic context. This one is very much, you know, it's a giallo, it's a murder mystery. So it's set very much in a realistic kind of framework. And I think that's something that kind of makes people like, I don't know, like I know I've seen a lot of like reviews of, you know, people that like Lucio Fulci's kind of more fantastical stuff, and they're like, this one, they don't really care for it all that much just because it's so nasty. I kind of feel like this one is probably, it's essentially like a more extreme and very, very Italian take on William Lustig's Maniac. It has like very, very overtly sexual kills. There's a lot of smut in it, and a kind of love it or hate it murderer, like with a very peculiar quirk, which we'll get into in a little bit, which is kind of like creepy or funny, like, or both, like depending on how you want to look at it. So I will say just right from the jump, this movie is absolutely not for everyone, although I will defend it in the sense that I do think it has some kind of this just squalid kind of power, you know what I mean? And I have to say that having watched this movie first, I can't even remember the first time I saw this. It was probably back in the 90s or the early 2000s at some point. And I think the only stuff that was available then, I think it was available on DVD, but that might have been just like the VHS transfer. So it was like very shitty looking. It was kind of pan and scan, and it looked like crap, which in a way kind of like suits the subject matter. But as with a lot of movies that came out in this era that I've been noticing, when they're actually like restored and put out on Blu-ray or, you know, HD or whatever, the way that they were initially intended to be seen, like in the theater, they actually look amazing. They actually look fantastic. And so a lot of these filmmakers, I think, like back in the 70s or whatever, that were known for being these kind of like schlock masters because people only saw their shit like on VHS or whatever, like now they're kind of seeing it and going, oh, they actually were like a professional filmmaker who knew how to set up a beautiful shot and stuff like that. And I think that this is definitely a prime example of that. Blue Underground, I believe, released a restored version. I believe it's ultra 4K in 2020, and it actually looks gorgeous. I mean, the shots are just beautifully framed. The colors look gorgeous and vibrant, and it looks fantastic, like compared to the crappy old VHS releases that everybody was probably used to from this movie. I mean, I feel like if you're gonna watch trash anyway, at least watch it the way it was intended. You know what I mean? As grotesque as it is, but this is actually like quite a beautiful looking movie. So it's nice to see it the way it was originally supposed to be seen. Now, like many of Fulci's films during this same time period that he made around this era, the exteriors of this were actually filmed in the United States, obviously in New York City in this case, but the interiors were all shot in Rome. The discrepancy, at least to me, isn't all that noticeable. And I will say that one of the best things about this movie is that it does have this sort of like grimy, ominous vibe of New York City, like in the late 70s, early 80s, where, you know, it was very dangerous, you know, kind of life was cheap. Every encounter with a stranger was like fraught with peril, like everyone was out to get you. So it does kind of like convey that very, very well, like in its shots of the streets and whatnot. Now, curiously, here's was something that I didn't know, like the first time that I saw this movie, that I just found out when I was doing research for this video. The New York Ripper was initially meant to be directed by Ruggero Deodato. And it was supposed to center around a serial killer who suffered from progeria, which is, you know, a real disease. They mentioned it in one of my favorite vampire films, The Hunger from 1983. This is a disease which causes rapid aging. Now, in this original iteration of the screenplay, the cops trying to solve the case would thus have a difficult time trying to catch the perp because his appearance would constantly be changing. You know what I mean? It's like you see a 30-year-old and now suddenly looks like a 6-year-old. You know what I mean? So this actually sounds like a pretty fascinating idea. And Ruggero Deodato would actually utilize it later on in his 1988 film Phantom of Death, which I actually haven't seen. But when Lucio Fulci got hold of the concept, him and his frequent co-writer, Dardano Sacchetti, who I've brought up before in this very series, they opted instead to make their version of the New York Ripper quack like a duck. And no, I didn't just make that up. He actually does quack like a duck and kind of like talk in a duck voice. Whether or not they made the right call in this case is entirely up to you. Like I said, I kind of feel like that's the main thing that people remember from this movie is that the killer like talks like a duck and quacks and stuff like that. But, you know, we'll get into that a little bit. So the movie opens up with a pretty good scene. A man is playing fetch with his dog, like out on this kind of like lake, you know, Riverside Park or whatever. But it doesn't take too long before this game of fetch goes hideously awry when the little doggy comes back with not a stick, but with a decomposing human hand. And turns out this hand belongs to a model named Anne Lynn, who has been brutally butchered and kind of like left in these in this shrubbery here by the side of the river. Her landlady tells police that she had actually been eavesdropping on the young woman's phone calls, as she did, and noted, she, like, oh, she had set up a date with this guy who talked like a duck. So that's kind of their main lead that they have to go on. Several weeks go by. They don't actually like tell you this. It's sort of like implied, like as, you know, as the dialogue goes on. So several weeks or a month or something like that go by. Another young woman is murdered. This one is actually, she's on a ferry. Like she rode the bike onto the ferry and there's like a car that's parked on there. And I'm assuming that the car belongs to an ex-boyfriend of hers or somebody that fucked her over because she wants to get into this car and like write, I guess she's gonna write shithead or something like that, like in lipstick, like on his windshield. So she gets in there to do that, but she ends up getting murdered like in broad daylight. So at this point, the rather world-weary investigators and the pathologist are starting to suspect that there might be a serial killer on the loose because the stab wounds on the woman on the ferry are very similar to the stab wounds that were found on the woman that was, you know, that the dog brought the hand and everything like that. But the police chief, who's actually played by Lucio Fulci himself, who usually like inserted himself in a small role in his movies, and he does in this case as well, it's usually just one scene. He kind of like admonishes everyone, hey, you know, keep your lip zipped. We don't want to provoke a big citywide panic. Meanwhile, there's this woman, this super freak named Jane. I think her name is Jane. One of her main activities, things she does for fun, is she likes to go to one of the many live sex shows, which I'm assuming were all up and down 42nd Street back in the old days. She goes in there, watches the live sex shows, and, you know, pretty much massages the muff there while she's like watching it. She doesn't care who sees. She's a freak like that, like I said. She also, another thing she does is she has this little bitty like tape recorder and she kind of records the sort of like orgasmic moaning of the performers, which I'm guess she's gonna use for later enjoyment so she can like prolong, you know, the fun. Now, while she's in there doing this, she's actually spotted by this kind of sinister looking dude who has two fingers missing on his right hand, I think. So not long after this sex show ends, the female performer that was up on stage, she goes into her intensely giallo-lit dressing room. It's great. It's like this beautiful, like vibrant, like green, and it's like really cool with like the red. I just love that lighting. So she's in there and she gets shanked in the vag by a broken wine bottle repeatedly, like many, many times. It's pretty nasty. It's pretty brutal. You know, and then she bleeds to death, obviously. So, you know, I mean, there are some who say that Lucio Fulci had some problems, had some issues with women. I'm just going to put that out there. You know, just getting stabbed in the vag with a broken arm. Yeah, it's a lot. So after this, the next potential target is Faye. And she actually gets approached on the subway. Like, she's kind of by herself, like, everybody gets off and she's on the subway, like, going home. And she gets approached by the eight-fingered wonder, the creepy dude from the sex show. But she manages to evade him, at least for a time. Like, she kind of gets off the train and runs away, and he chases her. Now, her leg does get sort of, like, viciously slashed, so she's kind of, like, limping and bleeding and everything like that, you know, after, like, the attacker catches up to her. After that, it kind of goes in a little bit of a weird... It appears to be a nightmare sequence in which, like, she's chased by this guy, presumably the eight-fingered guy from the subway, who we see very clearly. Like, you see what his face looks like. It's not like he's wearing a mask or nothing. But she gets slashed in the leg, and then there's, like, this weird, like, kind of nightmare sequence where it looks like her sort of dashing young boyfriend, whose name is Peter Bunch, slashes her to death with a straight razor. Now, she wakes up in the hospital, I mean, obviously alive and unslashed, and Peter is there, and he's very supportive and loving and whatnot, like, presumably he has been this entire time. So she tells him about this dream that she had. She's like, hey, I had this dream that, you know, after this guy chased me, like, that you came and you killed me, like, I saw your face. And she starts to speculate about why she might have dreamed that. And it's something about, like, you don't find out what it is until later on, but she says, oh, something about, I'm sorry, I didn't understand about Susie. They don't tell you until later on who Susie is and what that's all about. So she says that, she's like, yeah, that's probably why I dreamed that. It was kind of upsetting, but whatever. I know you'd never do anything like that. While Peter sits there looking very, very obviously shifty. So you know what I mean. So then we check back in with Jane, the super freak, who this time around is getting her jollies by going into this really sketchy dive restaurant or bar or something like that and sitting at a table by herself, and there's, like, all of these, this coterie of scumbags that are in there, and she, like, allows one of them to essentially, like, toe fuck her under the table. It's pretty gross. I'm like, who knows where those feet have been? Ew. So after that, like, she runs out of there because, like, she seems to like it, but then it upsets her. I don't know. Maybe that's how she gets her jollies. Like I said, I'm not judging. So she runs away and then makes an appointment to engage in some light bondage with good old Fingers McMissing Man, you know, the guy that's been chasing everybody around. But, like, after they do the thing and she's still tied to the bed and he's fallen asleep, then she finds out, it's like on the radio or some shit like that, that the guy that they're now calling the New York Ripper is also, you know, short a couple digits. So that might be, like, a red flag, something you want to look up. This guy that's sleeping right here next to me and has me tied to the bed also only has eight fingers. So shit. Now, she is actually able to free herself from her bonds without waking the guy up, but then she, like, starts running out in the hall. There's, like, all these doors locked, and she can't get out, and she ends up getting hacked to death in the hallway of this flea bag hotel where they had been having their rendezvous. I also neglected to mention that this, pretty much this entire time, Duckman, the duck dude, the duckster, Duck Dynasty, whatever, has been phoning the police and sort of, like, taunting them in his ridiculous-ass voice about them not being able to catch him. Like, basically, I'm not gonna do it, but because I can't do it. But basically, he's, like, calling them up and being like, quack, 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 blah, blah, blah. And, like, he has this, like, ridiculous sounding voice. In a horrifying turn of events, the killer actually, like, as a trick, he sort of, like, has this elaborate scheme where he ends up making the cops go to, like, a different place because he knows that they're tracing the phone calls and shit like that. While at the same time, he's actually savagely murdering the lead cop's favorite prostitute, whose name is Kitty, who he goes to all the time. And in, again, a very horrifying scene that shows that Fulci maybe had some issues with women, basically kills her by slicing through her nipple and then, like, her eyeball with, like, a straight razor. And so he chops her up, like, other places, too, but, like, using, like, this little razor, like, she's tied to the bed or whatever. You know, it wouldn't be a Fulci film unless we had some squirm-inducing eye trauma. So you get it here in loving close-up, just like you do, like, getting her nipple sliced in half. So, you know, there's that, too. Another thing I forgot to acknowledge in this whole stew is the character of Dr. Paul Davis, who's actually played by Paolo Malco, who was also in House by the Cemetery, among other things, which is also a Fulci film, in case you don't know. And he's kind of this smug, chess-playing psychologist, psychiatrist, not entirely sure. And he gets brought onto the case as a profiler, and he ends up sort of like butting heads with the head investigator, Lieutenant Fred Williams, over the characteristics of the potential Ripper, whereas he thinks, oh, this is a really intelligent guy, like somebody that comes from money, somebody that had some childhood trauma, yada yada, and he's kind of arguing that the eight-fingered guy, you know, he probably is not the killer because he seems too dumb to have, like, pulled all this stuff off. And it's kind of this whole thing. And then, like, the cop is just kind of like, well, I know in my gut, blah, blah, blah. So it's just kind of this intelligence versus street smarts kind of thing going on, too, which is actually kind of interesting. So the cops are, as I mentioned, pretty convinced that this menacing Greek man with the missing fingers is the killer, which, you know, you could argue, because you do see him, like, do some shit. So, you know, it's not crazy that they think that. But there is a plot development later in the film, which I won't really spoil, which actually casts doubt on that assumption. Though, I'm gonna be honest, if you're watching the film with even half of your attention, it'll be pretty evident who the Ripper actually is. You know what I'm saying? It's not like one where they're making it like a big, huge secret. They're a little bit obvious with it. But I will say, too, that that doesn't really tarnish the kind of seedy allure, fun, or whatever you want to call it that, of this movie. But yeah, don't go into this expecting it to be some big mystery whose reveal you won't see coming. I mean, if you're watching it, you'll pretty much figure out what's going on. You might not figure out, like, the motive behind it, but you'll probably figure out what's going on. Having said that, I will, you know, kind of jumping off from what I just said, I will point out this movie does have a pretty bizarre motivation for the killer's crimes, that does, matter of fact, involve a duck, after a fashion. It is very much in the traditional, sense of the giallo, where it's just kind of like some kind of thing that either happened in childhood or had to do with something that happened in the past, or something to do with childhood that is causing a person to kill people, and it's very much like that, but a little bit different. Now, if you're a Lucio Fulci fan, I can't imagine that you haven't seen this, as it's regularly touted as one of his most controversial, which is saying a lot. Shortly after its release, it was, naturally, relegated to the UK's Video Nasties list, and the film, as far as I'm aware, was banned outright there until as recently as 2002. And I think it's still only available in a censored version. I mean, at least as far as I know, if any of you guys are in the UK and can tell me, but I think you can still only get it. I don't think it's like a huge amount is cut out, but some is cut out. You can get it uncut here, as far as I'm aware. So yeah, I mean, I can kind of see why, like I said, I don't agree with like cutting movies up or like censoring them or anything like that, but you can see that maybe, in comparison to some of his other, like, films that are a lot gorier than this, because this is gory, but it's not, like, Zombie or, you know, House by the Cemetery. It's not gory like that. But like I said, because those are more fantastical, because they're supernatural creatures, you can get away with a lot more when you're doing something that's realistic, that's just about a Ripper-style killer, and it doesn't have any supernatural elements, then people are going to come down harder on the violence, I think. And I think especially this one, I think a lot of people thought it was kind of like misogynist. I mean, a lot of the murders are very, very sexual in nature. You know, people getting, like I said, you know, the woman getting, like, fucking stabbed in the vagina with a broken bottle, like, just over and over again. So, you know, getting nipples sliced in half and stuff like that. So I can see why people might have had a problem with it. It is kind of like a mean-spirited movie. It's kind of scuzzy. It's kind of borderline pornographic. There's a lot of, like, nudity. There's a lot of simulated sex in this. Like I said, it kind of takes place in this whole sleazy era of New York City. There's live sex shows. There's just, you know, there's masturbation. There's all kind of crazy shit going on. So it is kind of, like, riding that edge. And as I said, it does kind of slaughter women in very appallingly gruesome and very, very sexual ways, which, like I said, maybe some people might have a problem with. And it does make kind of the streets of New York City look like this neon-lit hellscape where everyone you see is kind of like out to exploit you or physically harm you or do something in some way. Not gonna lie though, I've always kind of dug it. It's just kind of like, especially since I've seen like the restoration of it, which really shows Fulci's kind of like artistic eye in a way that you didn't really get to see when it was just like the cheaper VHS type style prints. He really does know how to like artfully frame this grotesque vulgarity, like, for maximum effect. Some of the shots in this are legit, like, quite beautiful. I will say it's probably not among my favorite Fulci films, But if you're really into ultra-violent giallo movies that have a massive side helping of smut, I mean, you could certainly do a lot worse than this one. And if you like that kind of thing, then I would absolutely recommend it. Although, like I said, it's not for everybody, so go into it with that. Like, go into it. If you liked Maniac, you'll probably like this one as well, because it's along similar lines. Although this one, I would argue, is nastier than Maniac, which, like, I realize that that's also saying a lot. So that'll do it for this Flickers of Fear, continuing on with Giallo July, and I will see you guys on the next one. Bye.